Welcome to our Bible study on the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 25, verses 1 through 13. As always, I will assume that you have read the passage, that you have your Bible open before you, and that you understand our translations may not agree. On these last three Sundays before Advent, yep, Advent starts November 29th, so these last three Sundays before that, we will be reading from the 25th chapter of Matthew, looking at two parables and the vision of the coming of the Son of Man. If we look at the whole chapter 25, we notice that chapter 25 marks not only the end of the fifth major teaching section in Matthew that had begun back at chapter 23, verse 1, in fact, some scholars refer to that section from 23:1 through 25:46 as the judgment discourse, but the ending of chapter 25 also marks the end of Jesus' public ministry, as is made clear in chapter 26, verse 1, which says, "When Jesus had finished all of these sayings, he said to his disciples." That phrase, "all of these sayings," refers all the way back to 23:1. And the phrase, "he said to his disciples," reminds us that from 26:1, Jesus will move toward his passion in the presence of close friends and disciples. Some background on chapter 25, verse 1 through 13, is that although there are some echoes, faint echoes of this parable in Mark, chapter 13, verse 35, and in Luke at chapter 12, 35 through 36, and also at Luke chapter 13, 25, the parable itself is only found in the Gospel of Matthew. We are told that some are wise and some are foolish right at the beginning. We don't find out who is who until later. Indeed, that's the whole purpose of the parable. You can't tell who is wise and who is foolish just by looking. They all look alike. They all come to the wedding. They all are identified as bridesmaids or virgins. They all have lamps. Just by looking at them, we would not know that five are wise and five are foolish. So it's not the looks, the lamps, or the long dresses. Presumably. I have no idea what was appropriate attire. I just liked the alliteration. Anyways, that set the wise apart from the foolish. It's the readiness. And by the way, as we will see, the setting is significant. The timing is important. But that number 10 is neither. The setting. Where Jesus tells this parable is significant. On the Mount of Olives. In Zechariah chapter 14, that foretells the day when the Lord will stand on the mountain as King of the whole earth. That's Zechariah 14:9. So this teaching about being prepared for the coming of the Lord is being told in a setting where people who knew their tradition, knew their history, knew their story, would know that passage from Zechariah, and that adds power and significance to the parable. The timing is important. Soon Jesus is going to his crucifixion. His followers will be in the dark, waiting for his return. How will they be prepared? Weddings, however, were very, very important. The greatest of all festivities in a Palestinian village. The bride, groom, and guest were dispensed from certain religious duties. And so for Americans, because we treat work like a religion, we would be off work. But in the village, the bride, the groom, the guest would be exempted from sleeping on booths at the Feast of Tabernacles, or the Feast of Booths, which was held on the 15th day of the 7th month, which would be about the same as our late September, late October. One of the three pilgrimage feasts In other words, it's a big deal, but you were exempt. Scholars forsook the study of the Torah because attending a wedding was a more important duty and privilege. And maybe because they were geeks and nerds and didn't get an invite to a party very often. I don't know. So everyone is wanting to be there. The high point of the wedding came when the bridegroom took the bride from her father's house to her new home, usually in a litter, and his attendants and guests escorted her there. About bridesmaids, some of your translations may say maidens or girls or virgins. Various translations use the word maidens, bridesmaids, girls, virgins. Technically, the word is virgins and would likely refer to young women of marriageable age as opposed to elderly women or mothers or widows or very young girls. The word bridesmaids makes sense given the context of a wedding and the emphasis on the bridegroom. There is no bride. Now, some translations at the end of verse 1 where it says, to meet the bridegroom, add the words, and the bride, but those words are missing in the best early manuscripts. And here's a little Greek, because it wouldn't be a Bible study if I didn't give you at least one Greek word. The Greek word for foolish is moria, from which we get that rude word, moron. A word about parables. Typically, gospel parables are of two types. Those that offer a surprise of grace at the end, a party for a prodigal, a full day's pay for one-hour workers, a tax collector justified, etc. And those that follow the direct course from cause to effect, as surely as the harvest comes from what is sown. There are no gifts, there are no parties. Together, the two types of parables present justice and grace, either of which become distorted without the other. Today's parable moves straight from cause to predictably painful effect. The door is shut and will not be opened. Usually, the details in a parable are more realistic, while in an allegory, they may seem contrived to fit a theological meaning. Some scholars see our passage as Matthew editing or changing Jesus' parable into an allegory. The bridegroom is Jesus, which is clear from Matthew's previous use of this image, as we see in chapter 9, verses 14 through 15. The reason why John the Baptist's disciples fasted, but Jesus' disciples did not. Can wedding guests mourn as long as the bridegroom is with them? And again in Matthew chapter 22, verses 1 through 13, that parable about the marriage feast. But also from within our own passage, from the fact that he is addressed as Lord, Lord, there at 25:11. And speaks in solemn, truly, truly pronouncements at 25:12. The bridesmaids or virgins represent the church, the present mixture of faith and unfaithful that's going to be sorted out at the parousia. That's a Greek word that actually means presence or arrival or coming or official visit, which Christians use to speak about the return of Christ, or the second coming of Christ. And by the way, that phrase is never found in the Bible, the second coming of Christ. The brides, bridesmaids, or virgins all have lamp and oil. They all fall asleep, but only some are really prepared for the return when the time comes. Although the image of God as the bridegroom and the church as the bride was prevalent in the Old Testament and Jewish tradition and continued in the Christian community with Christ as the bridegroom and the church as the bride, as we see in Gospel of John chapter 3 verse 29, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 2, at Ephesians chapter 5, verse 25 through 32, and in Revelation at chapter 19, verse 7, and in chapter 21 at verse 2, 9, and 17. That imagery does not fit Matthew's purposes here, and the bride does not appear at all. To represent the church, Matthew needs a group in which the members look the same to external appearances, but who will be separated at the end. The wise and foolish terminology corresponds to earlier in the Sermon on the Mount at chapter 7, verse 24 through 27. Both houses may have looked the same, but one was built on the rock, and the other was built on sand. We also hear in this parable about lamps or light. The five foolish maidens are not foolish because they slept, but because their lamps are not lit. Light in the parable symbolizes good deeds done in response to God's gracious initiative. In the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, "You are the light of the world," in chapter 5, verse 14. And a verb related to that Greek word for lamps is used at chapter 5, verses 15 and 16, when Jesus says, "Nor do men light a lamp and put it under a bushel, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works." Light is a symbol of good deeds or a proper moral disposition. The bridegroom's delay does not necessarily mean that Matthew expects a further long delay, because in his situation, there has already been a delay. Remember, Matthew likely wrote his gospel 40 years or so after the resurrection. His story points out that both those who thought the parousia would never take place and those who counted on a long delay and still had time were both tragically mistaken. The delay can also be seen in a larger context, as clearly shown in the keys to this story. Consider that this parable is one of three stories bearing this theme. My master is delayed. We saw that at chapter 24, verse 48, which is right before our parable. The bridegroom was delayed is in our passage, 25:5, and the parable right after our passage, after a long time, the master of those slaves came, that's at 25:19. It may have been that when Jesus was telling the parable, it was designed to speak of preparation in view of the kingdom having arrived at the door. But because of the delay, in Matthew's hand, the story is in the futuristic mode. It could be that in Matthew's church, they were facing the problem of how to live and work appropriately as Christians in view of a delayed parousia. Seen in this way, the delay created the crisis for some of the maidens or virgins. The delay was the circumstance about which some proved wise and some were foolish. The delay triggered the series of events, ending in the final exclusion of those unprepared. One of the themes dear to Matthew's heart is the theme of the anticipation of coming judgment. It is important for him to emphasize to his community two things with regard to Jesus' return. One is that they don't know when it will come, so speculation is futile. The second is that it will come, so preparation is crucial. The bridegroom's arrival is the parousia. Since Matthew designates the story as like the kingdom of heaven, this shows that the kingdom has a future aspect, that the final coming of the kingdom for which the church prays, remember chapter 6, verse 10, all right, thy kingdom come, is identical with the parousia of the Son of Man, so that both phrases, Son of Man and Kingdom of God, have present and future aspects. The return of Christ, for Matthew, will be a time that separates the good from the bad. You see that in chapter 13, verses 36 through 43, and in chapter 26, verses 31 through 46. The five wise virgins and the five foolish virgins represent these two groups. In the conclusion to the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew at chapter 7, verse 21 through 23, Jesus says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. On that day many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord,' then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away from me, you evildoers.'" In this parable, the bridesmaids cry out, "Lord, Lord," and the bridegroom answers, "I do not know you." Of course, this is about oil, or rather having oil, and that represents what's going to count at the parousia. Matthew will show in his final scene later at chapter 25, verse 31 through 46, with that vision of the coming of the Son of Man, that having oil corresponds to deeds of love and mercy. The problem in Matthew's story is that some of those who were waiting lacked oil, not that they went to sleep, since both the wise and the foolish slept. Here, Matthew pictures preparation for the parousia as responsible deeds of discipleship, not constant watching for the end. The attempt to buy oil at midnight is not realistic as much as it is symbolic and shows the futility of trying to prepare when it is too late. For Matthew, there are only two groups, those who are ready and those who are not. However, if the oil represents good deeds, it leaves us with a puzzling question about the parable. Can good deeds run out? Can we run to the store to buy more good deeds? And finally, we come to keep awake, which may be the concluding charge, but as Matthew tells the story, falling asleep was not the problem. We've already seen both the wise and the foolish fall asleep. To keep awake, or to keep watch, in the sense of constantly being alert to signs for the coming of the Son of Man, is not Matthew's understanding of responsible discipleship. Rather, Matthew pictures faithful disciples as those who do the work of the kingdom, and so are prepared for the parousia whenever it comes. Such disciples can lie down to sleep in confidence, rather than being kept awake by panicky last-minute anxiety. Perhaps a better way than to say keep awake or keep watch would be to say be prepared. As I said at the beginning, it's the readiness that sets the wise and the foolish apart. The wise have enough oil for whenever the bridegroom arrives. The foolish only have enough for their own timetable. Matthew is setting forth a theology for the delay, for the ongoing life of the church in the world. The issue is not knowing when the bridegroom will come. The issue has to do with responsible behavior in the meantime. After all, the coming of the bridegroom does not make some wise and some foolish. It simply reveals who is. Thank you for listening. Take care and God bless.